This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show, listeners from 164 countries worldwide. Welcome to episode number 824. This is your intrepid. What exactly does that mean? Intrepid. Yeah, well, I don't know. Am I intrepid? This is your host, Jason Hartman, and thank you so much for joining me here today. I just got back from another brunch over at Tony Hsieh's house. Yeah, Tony Hsieh, the founder and CEO of Zappos. He has these interesting Sunday brunches at his very unassuming trailer park here in Las Vegas. And he does them every Sunday, really a very generous guy to host everybody there. And, you know, it's an interesting crowd, to say the least. Tony Hsieh is definitely a hipster. So going to his brunches, it's probably not what you would expect from a billionaire. And he is likely the most popular man in Las Vegas. He's redeveloping the whole downtown and really doing some phenomenal stuff. So I just love it. And you may have read his book, Delivering Happiness, or, you know, heard about all the corporate folklore about Zappos and what amazing customer service they have and so forth. And then he sold the company to Amazon, you know, did incredibly well. And then he's using his money to do all kinds of cool things in the city and other stuff as well. So that's the one thing I want to say. I just want to remind you of that. You know, when I was in Peru a couple of years ago, I remember I did a show from there, or at least an intro from there. And maybe you'll catch this on a Flashback Friday episode, or you already caught it, and you remember what I said there. Because the group I was with in Peru, one of the hotels they put us up in was so beautiful. I mean, it was spectacular. And a couple of us were just so impressed, and we went down to the front desk and found out that, like, you know, and of course hotel room prices are all over the board. I know y'all know that. Never pay the rack rate for a hotel. You can always negotiate a hotel price. But, you know, that hotel was so gorgeous. And like in the closet, you know, they had four bathrobes, two women's bathrobes, two men's bathrobes, you know, so you could take your pick of different styles. And I mean, it was phenomenal. This is a phenomenal hotel. And I have stayed in some gorgeous hotels over the years. But this one was phenomenal. And it just came to mind. And what I said when I was recording the show that day is, take care of this money thing. Take care of this money thing. It's a thing, right? It's a thing in all of our lives. And we've just got to take care of it. And look, I grew up poor. I did not have money at all. And, you know, money isn't everything, as the old saying goes. We've all heard it. But it is something. It is definitely something. And you would have to be completely immature and jealous and green with envy, as the saying goes, to deny that money isn't something. It is something. It matters. It matters in our world. It matters to capitalism, to freedom, to being able to do good in the world. And I just kind of thought of that again today because I was looking at all the stuff Tony Hsieh's doing, and it's just really phenomenal. And also, I am going to be talking to you in the upcoming weeks from Europe. Yeah, I'm going on another trip to Europe. And, you know, speaking of that money thing again, it is, I like getting a good value better than anybody, okay? And, you know, I got a very good deal on my airfare. I can't believe how cheap it was, really. And then I upgraded, you know, my class a little bit there. But I don't like to waste money either, right? But, you know, and I'm thinking about my first trip to Europe as an adult, right? When I rented a car, drove around with friend, and you know how a couple of different trips to Europe just really, or anywhere in the world for that matter, I've been to 80 countries now, how I just always try to economize and stuff like that. And you know, I'm thinking, isn't it just so freeing not to have to think too terribly much about money, right? Hey, look, at even billionaires, and I know a few billionaires, and many, many deca-millionaires and centa-millionaires, a couple of those too. Deca means more than 10 million, and centa means, you know, like 100, right? More than 100 million. So, you know, even they like getting a good value. They don't like just wasting their money, especially if they didn't come from money. You know, then they appreciate it more because they remember how their life used to be, usually. And that's one of the good things. But it's really just it's much more efficient for you to live in such a way where you don't stress about money. So take care of this money thing. That's the first thing I want to say on this episode today. And we're going to talk to a client of ours, a client case study, Ani Wee, who will be with us in a moment here. You know, her story's interesting. A single mom, really did some phenomenal things in real estate. You know, she talked to me the other day and just went on and on about how, you know, listening to this one specific podcast episode of mine changed her entire life. Changed her entire life listening to that one episode. Now, what could change your entire life? You know, what do you want to do in your life that could completely change it? I would urge you, just get to that breakthrough point. I mean, for example, if you're listening to the show and you're thinking, well, you know, I'm on the periphery, right? You know, I bought a couple of properties, but I'm not like really doing it, right? I'm not really building a big portfolio. And maybe that's what you want to do. Hopefully it is, because income property is the most historically proven asset class in the world, right? It is. And that's what we teach you about here. A little bit of business and life success stuff as well on the Creating Wealth Show. But it's mostly about income property investing, of course. It's the most historically proven asset class in the entire world. So what do you need to do to get more immersed in that whole thing? Immersion. Get immersed in it. Well, one of the things you could certainly do, as a shameless self-promoter, I will say, is join the Venture Alliance Mastermind. That will get you more immersed because you'll be hanging out with some friends that are really going after it. They're going after life in general, but certainly after building good real estate portfolios. Come to our live events. When we have live events, come to them. Come to all of them. And by the way, if you're a Venture Alliance member, those are included with your membership. But that's a really important thing. You know, get yourself more immersed. That is a key thing in life, immersion. Be immersed in the thing you want to do more and more. Very, very important. Now, I want to talk to you about crap rate. Cap rate. No, for this episode, for the first time, I'm going to call it crap rate. And it's not the rate of how much crap you're willing to tolerate or anything like that. I'm calling it crap rate because I see some clients making a big mistake focusing on the crap rate for a property, the capitalization rate, cap rate, capitalization rate. Obviously, you know I'm kidding, right? I'm making that word up, crap rate. But why shouldn't you focus on the cap rate? Why is it, you know, look at, we have never promoted this metric that is commonly used in commercial real estate where they are used to making a lower return on investment for many reasons we've discussed on many prior episodes. In commercial real estate, they're used to using cap rate. And why is it the thing in commercial real estate? Well, in commercial real estate, it's much harder if you're buying a big building, a big office building, or a, you know, hopefully not a big retail center, as the retail apocalypse is in full swing, as I predicted it would be 20 years ago, more than 20 years ago. I remember going to a presentation at the Pacific Club, a swanky private club in Newport Beach, California. I used to be a junior member there. I remember hearing a presentation from some retail brokers who were talking about commercial real estate. And I said, hey, you know, this internet thing, I think it's going to turn into something. You know, I said this 20 years ago. Before anybody really knew what the extent of that would be, obviously, right? But I said, don't you see this putting downward pressure on shopping in the physical world? And they said, well, you know, one guy, I got him to kind of come around. You know, he was an old timer, made a ton of money and, you know, in retail properties. And I got him to kind of come around and see my point of view on that. And I'll bet you nowadays he really sees my point of views 20 years later, because the retail apocalypse is upon us. And we're going to talk a little more about that and what it means to our tenants. Our tenants need to have jobs to rent our properties. Well, actually, they don't really need to have jobs, because they could be on the dole and have Section 8 government handouts. But that's another type of investing. So not necessarily good or bad, by the way. You know, a lot of people do very well in Section 8, and some people hate it. I find that there's not much middle ground there, as I've talked about before. But back to the crap rate, because that is where we were going, at the risk of being on a tangent here, before we get to our client case study interview. The crap rate is not that meaningful. Why? You know what I'm going to say, right? You know what I'm going to say. Because it doesn't include a couple of very important things. It doesn't consider appreciation, and it doesn't consider leverage. And see, in commercial real estate, typically, of course, there are by the way, I wanted to make a disclaimer. Everything I ever say on this show, ever, there is an exception. There's always an exception. No rules or laws apply universally, including this one. Including this one does not apply universally. Even the universal law is not universal. And so typically commercial real estate does not appreciate as well as the good old humble single family home. Talked about that, analyzed it, many other episodes. Not going to go into it here. So that's one thing. The other thing is the financing is not as good on commercial real estate as it is on residential real estate investments. So if you're using crap rate, and you're comparing it to, say, buying a Walgreens on a triple net lease, buying the property a Walgreens leases from you, or an office building or something like that, that would not be an accurate comparison. Crap rate is not a very good metric for the residential real estate investor. What you should look at is the overall return on investment. So when you go to jasonhartman.com/properties, and you look in our properties section, and you look at the overall return on investment, that is the key metric. That is the proper number to look at. Now, if you want to look at something close to crap rate, okay, look at the cash-on-cash return if you want, okay? But, you know, I'm telling you, again, you can't compare that to other investments, because it doesn't give you enough information. It's not multidimensional enough. Now, even the overall return on investment does not include a couple of things. It doesn't include my trademark mouthful phrase that you can't say 10 times fast, even if you try really hard. In fact, maybe we should have a contest. Who can say this 10 times fast and you'll win a prize? Inflation-induced debt destruction, inflation-induced debt destruction, inflation-induced debt destruction, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so that's the metric that, of course, cap rate doesn't include, but even the overall return on investment doesn't include inflation-induced debt destruction, the hidden wealth creator in real estate investments. Additionally, what else doesn't include? Well, none of the returns on any of our performas look at the overall lifetime value of your property portfolio when you get the advantage, the huge advantage, by the way, of the 1031 tax-deferred exchange. When you rebalance your portfolios, when you do the 2-for-1 or the 3-for-1 rebalancing of your portfolio, and you take advantage of the 1031 tax-deferred exchange, so you get to reinvest all of that capital without paying tax. You sell your business, you sell stocks, you sell bonds, you sell that mutual fund. You're going to pay tax. You got to pay the government before you get to reinvest the money. With income property under the 1031 tax-deferred exchange, you can reinvest the whole thing. That is beautiful. Not your post-tax dollars. You get to reinvest your pre-tax dollars. Phenomenal, phenomenal deal. None of it includes that. So if you're going around and you're comparing even the overall return on investment, which looking at jasonhartman.com, in the properties page, you know, typically you're going to see overall return on investments. And of course, this is a pro forma. Of course, it's a projection. Look, just assume it's not going to work out as well as projected. Okay. It might be better. I mean, it happens better many times. In fact, the client case study we've got coming up, you're going to hear a story that's way better than what's on our Performa, okay? When you hear Ani Wee talk in a few minutes here, okay? But just assume it's not going to be as good as that. Cut it in half if you want, and take that projected 35% return and cut it in half, 17.5%. But just know that even the 17.5%, which is phenomenal, it's truly amazing. And those of you new listeners who don't believe anything I say and think I have no credibility and think I'm crazy and I'm, the hokey broker that's about to go to jail, right? Because you don't know how to calculate return on investment yet because you haven't listened to me teach you that. And by the way, you should go to jasonhartman.com and on the front page, watch that free video we have because that really leads you through reading the Performa and understanding the numbers in 27 minutes for free. You can learn to be a great deal analyzer, okay? A great deal analyzer, and that's a critical component. But yeah, even the overall return on investment does not include the benefit of inflation-induced debt destruction, which is huge. You know that from those of you who've been to my Creating Wealth seminar or my JHU, Jason Hartman University Live seminar, or have listened to the show and heard me talk about that. You know that's very significant. It also does not include the tax benefit of the 1031 tax deferred exchange, which plays out over time. Even internal rate of return, IRR, the holy grail of metrics, does not include that, either of those things. Okay? So there you go. All right. Hey, without further ado, because I risk already this intro is getting very long and I have a whole nother part of this show for you, our interview, a client case study with Ani Wee. So let's listen to Ani and hear her story. It's a great story. And she is one of our clients from Alaska. How unique is that? So here is Ani. Hey, it's my pleasure to welcome another client back to the show, and this will be a client case study with a listener and now client from Anchorage, Alaska, of all places. We don't have that many listeners in Alaska, but it's always great to have one, and I have been to Anchorage and Fairbanks before and through the Yukon Territory as well up in Alaska and Canada a long time ago. It's very beautiful up there, and our client is Ani Wee, and Ani, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Jason.
Yeah, well, it's good to have you on. And I just loved it when one of our investment counselors introduced me to you the other day. It was so great to hear your story. And I just always love to hear someone tell me I changed their life. And that's always great, hopefully for the better. And I think so in your case, it sounds like. But give us a little bit of your background. First of all, what do you do for a living?
Yeah, I work for the federal government as an auditor. And most people, it's basically accounting work, pretty much all the reconciliation of schedules and doing audit. So I've been with them for close to 10 years now, and I'm pretty happy there.
Uh-huh. Good stuff. Did you grow up in Alaska?
No. I grew up actually, I'm from Taiwan, the Republic of China. I relocated to America when I was 16. I went to a boarding school in Michigan, and then I just settled down and went to college in a different state, and then I moved to Alaska actually for the job.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's, I was going to ask you, how did you end up in Anchorage, Alaska? You know, that's sort of an out-of-the-way place. Give us a little insight before we talk about your real estate investing story, because I think a lot of the listeners will be interested. You know, not a lot of people go to Alaska. I have been, and I feel very fortunate to have been there. And, you know, I did an Inside Passage cruise from Vancouver on the way there, and then on the way back, did some backcountry stuff. And I remember going to, was it Denali Park, I think? And seeing all of that, and you know, it's just gorgeous up there, obviously. But hey, I was there. Actually, I got to tell you something funny. I have a picture. I got to find this picture. It would be great for a Facebook Flashback Friday or Throwback Thursday of me standing on the Alaskan pipeline at midnight, and it's is bright as day. Because I was there on the longest day of the year, the summer solstice, June 21st. And, you know, it really messes up the sleeping patterns. I remember we were in that famous fish restaurant you have there, Simon and Seifert's, I believe it's called. That's when I really loved Alaskan halibut and discovered it. And it I thought it was about 6 o'clock. And I looked at my watch and it was 10 p.m.
Yeah, that's a challenge for me, because a lot of time I really have to have a military clock here. Otherwise, I have a hard time remembering whether that's 2 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And because the light is, you know, in the summertime, it's all 24 hours available, much more so in Barrow, Alaska, which is the northernmost town here in America, rather than Anchorage. Anchorage is a little south, and it's a little easier in terms of daylight to recognize what time it is. But when I lived for many years in Barrow, Alaska, and that was a challenge for me to try to figure out what time is the time, a.m. or p.m.
So you lived way up there. Wow, that's just amazing. And so do a lot of people use the military clock, the 24-hour clock up there?
A lot of people do, because it's easier to know, you know, like 2 o'clock in the military time would be 14 hours. So it's just easier to recognize, because you no longer can trust your sense of time from the 24-hour darkness a lot of places. Yes. And it's just a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You cut out for just a moment, but I think people got the message. It's very hard to recognize time with that. So, I mean, you work for the government. You're an auditor. Tell us a little bit about your real estate story. I guess, how did you happen to come across my podcast a few years back?
In 2008, I was going through a personal divorce at the same time the market crashed. So I had a lot of questions about the economy at large. And so I was looking for answers with the alternative media. I went into Carrie's website and podcast. I started to listen to him, and pretty soon I remember he did an interview with you, and it resonated with me, and because I was listening to a lot of messages given to me by people who are more of a gold and silver investment. And a lot of people were telling me that, you know, in terms of the global economic crash, real estate will be a liability more than an asset. So a lot of people were advising me to purchase heavy metals, such as gold and silver.
Precious metals. Yeah, yeah, right, right. Metals, and the interesting thing about all those precious metals people, Ani, they have the right premise and their arguments are correct. They just don't have the right conclusion. I've been very, as you know from listening to the show, I've always been very fascinated with them, but they just don't give the whole picture.
Yes, I definitely resonated with your idea that about precious metals. I use precious metal more as an insurance policy versus an investment strategy. And before I ran into your podcast, I was just buying real estate. I started the real estate investing actually because of the book Rich Dad Poor Dad by Mr. Kiyosaki. But then I didn't really know what I was doing, so I would buy. Say when my neighbor died of breast cancer, I bought her condo, which is just right next to mine. I live in a multiplex, and I just went and paid cash for it. You know, I just didn't really think about leveraging or anything, because in my world, where I came from, people tend to pay for things in cash. And if they don't have the money, they just don't buy. So it was very strange to hear you talk about leverage, because it was the antithesis of how I was brought up, you know. But then I keep listening. I said, well, you know, please keep an open mind, because it is true, using leverage, you can buy more. So I made some silly investment, just, you know, buying condos and whatnot here in Anchorage, Alaska. But and they're not as lucrative an investment now, looking back after having heard your podcast for several years. I look at my old investment, real estate investment, I realize they're really not generating very good, you know, income for me. But then in the meantime, fortunately, during that period of time, I just happened to live in an area where we have a lot of military personnel wanting to move out of base. So despite the fact condo investing wasn't the greatest investment I can think of, but it wasn't the worst investment either, such as, you know, putting your money in a CD account. So so I end up breaking even. I later sold the condo and then moved the investment to Florida instead. So I first started purchasing property from you, I think, after hearing your podcast for several years in 2013. That's when I decided to purchase a property from your network.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the first property you bought through us, I believe, was a duplex, right?
Yeah, it was. You interviewed this gentleman named Jack, and I mean, I heard many, many interviews before, and I don't really know why. I just really liked that interview. And so I went to your website, and then I noticed there is a duplex. I said, oh, multifamily. Because most of the properties on your property on your website is single family.
Or single family.
Yeah. So that was the first time I saw a duplex, and it was 2008. It looks, you know, kind of new. And so I started doing some research around the area, and I discovered an issue with Chinese drywall. So I called up Sarah, and then she gave me the name of Jack. So I contacted him. I discussed about this duplex. So I purchased it from Jack Lee for $78,000. At the time, I didn't really have the money because my money were all tied into these condos. I bought a couple, you know, investment condo. Plus, I live in the condo myself. And most Alaskan, you know, a lot of Alaskan like condos just because it's really hard to do maintenance.
Oh, I believe it. Yeah.
Yeah, the extreme weather.
In the Alaskan winter, it's very difficult. Yes.
Yeah, and then on top of that, there's, you know, I mean, and then the problem with a condo is always the condo due, and which is pretty hefty, maybe about $300-$400 a month. So, but at the time, you know, that's what I did. So I talked to Jack. I said, you know, he, I think originally was listed for $80,000, and I said if I pay cash, you know, he agreed to take $78,000. So I just went to the bank and for the first time, you know, got a line of equity, loan against my condo. I didn't have a mortgage because I always paid for cash. So I just got a low interest loan and paid Jack and bought the duplex from him.
Now that one just about doubled in value, right? Did you a cash out refi, I believe, on that?
Yeah, well, I continue listening to your podcast afterwards, and then, you know, Jack's secretary, Lori, managed the condo until Jack decided to retire. So so I bought it in somewhere in April 2013. I just recently, maybe around like January of this year, I did a cash out refi for, it was appraised at $150,000.
And you bought it for how much did you say?
$78,000.
Wow. So yeah, that's fantastic. Congratulations. It doubled in value. And you bought a bunch more of them, right? Didn't you buy several?
Yes, I did. And the reason why I did a cash out refi is because the rent has also gone up. Mm-hmm. I would have sold it if the rent stayed at $500 per side each month. But the rent had gone even, you know, $850 per side each month from $500. So it was not really a good idea to sell, even though I was getting a lot of offers, people writing me postcards or letters wanting to buy.
Yeah. By the way, folks, if you don't have investment properties yet, if you haven't started your investment career yet, you're going to start getting, and it's such a great feeling, isn't it? To every month on all of my properties, I get constant postcards and letters from people saying they want to buy my property. And I just know that I am controlling the world's most valuable commodity, income property, you know, and the whole world beats a path to your door. You know, there's such a limited supply of it. It's just a wonderful position to be in, to be the seller. You know, you're in the driver's seat when you're the seller, and or the owner, I should say. You know, hopefully you're not selling them, but, you know, occasionally we do sell, and when we rebalance our portfolios. But yeah, isn't that a great feeling, though?
Yeah, it was. I know I never gotten any postcard for my Alaskan condos, even, you know. But I was starting getting postcards for this particular duplex, many postcards, and I decided not to sell. And then I just continue rent them, you know, just rent it out. And I used the proceed of the money to purchase, I think, one more property. A single family home for $10,000 in Fort Myers this time. The duplex that was sold to me by Jack back in 2013 was located in a suburb of Fort Myers, Florida, called the Lehigh Acres. So I didn't really leverage either. I just put the you know, cash down, just make the transaction faster. I was very surprised by the appraisal record of $150,000. And then later on, I attribute to the fact that Fort Myers area has the number one job growth, or number two. It's one of the top 10 in the nation for job growth and population influx. So,
I'll tell you though, if you talk to any of our clients that bought properties back in, and I love how you say the numbers, you always go 2008 instead of 2008, you know, but any of our clients that bought, you know, anywhere in the last 7 years, I mean, they have just cleaned up. You know, it's incredible the kind of appreciation they've had. And that leads to the next issue. You know, generally, as you know from listening to the podcast, and as all our listeners know, we believe in buy and hold investing. You know, why would you sell an asset that produces 20, 25, 30, 35% or even, you know, 40, 45% return on investment every year, right? That'd be crazy, you know, when you look at the overall return, because it's a multi-dimensional asset class. And, you know, if you want to look at those, go to jasonhartman.com, click on properties and look at the actual performas if you're not familiar with how we calculate all that. But, you know, we generally believe in buy and hold, but occasionally the properties appreciate so much. And, you know, that's a great problem to have. Okay. It's a great problem to have that you really do need to rebalance your portfolio, because the rents, the income never keeps up with the appreciation. You know, it's always out of sync a little bit. And so I would ask you, and this is an interesting part of our case study for the listeners today, that your property, you bought it for the first one that we're talking about here, the first one you bought through us, you bought it for $79,000 and it appreciated to $150,000. Now, what is the rent on that? And do you remember what the rent was when you bought it and what it is now, for example? Like, give us a comparison there.
Yes. When I bought it in 2013 from Jack, it was $500 on each side, so it would be $1,000.
$1,000 total, okay. So a little better than 1% rent-to-value ratio, yes, when you acquired it at acquisition,
yes.
Okay?
Yes. And now it's $850, so I'm getting $1,700 a month.
Wow, that's fantastic. Those rents have gone up very, very nicely, and you know what? You don't need to sell that property. Don't feel you need to do that at all, because you're still getting better than 1% rent to value. I would even almost question, I wonder if it's worth more than the appraisal you got. You know, maybe it's really worth 160, 170, 180.
According to the appraisal report, because they use different methods to come up with their figure, according to the appraisal report, they said if they use the rent method, it would be appraised at maybe around $168,000 to $170,000, but then the appraiser decided to use a more conservative cost approach or some other approach, and then he came up with $150,000. But yes, if you look at the, it's on a quarter acre lot. It has a septic and a well, probably not exactly. If I had known it has a septic and well, and sometimes it does involve more work when you are responsible.
You wouldn't have favored that. Yeah, that's not ideal, by the way.
Yeah. Not ideal, but it was better than buying.
But a lot of properties have it, so yeah.
So I bought it, and I have a little repair, you know, with the wells and the septic tank, but it's nothing major happened. I think I had to change a well pump one time. But I think that the area has a lot of potential, and I got a lot of yellow postcards during the years. You know, that
the yellow postcard, the famous yellow postcard. Please sell your house to us.
Yes, and I think that the people who are true investors knew the intrinsic value of the duplex because of economic development in that area, Demographic studies, like Mr. Dent has done, also indicated that a lot of
Harry Dent,
like to move to a warmer climate, and Florida is considered a very desirable area. And I think Fort Myers, Cape Coral, Lehigh Acres happen to be without any major industry in a sense, pollution control. There's really no pollution. There's no heavy industry. The area is, enjoys sunny weather, which is almost like the opposite of Alaska. A lot of sun.
Well, it's the polar opposite of Alaska almost. Pardon the pun. Yeah.
So I guess just to attract that baby boomer population, you know, that I guess 10,000 people reach their 65th birthday every day now. Yeah. And just more and more people
it's
moving in.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing for sure. Okay, so I want to make sure I mention a couple things so the listeners get some more education out of this. You talked about the appraisal, and, you know, I've talked about this in the past, but just for everybody, there's three basic methods of appraisal. There's the comparison approach, which applies to condos and single family homes mostly. There is the income approach, and you talked about how the appraiser did the income approach and wanted to appraise it basically for more money, but then he got more conservative on you and he did the cost approach. So three basic approaches: comparison, income approach, and replacement cost approach. Okay, just so the listeners know that, because I didn't want to gloss over that. It was an important point.
Yeah, that was, and I think because the lender wants the most conservative approach. So that's why he chose. And so basically how it works is that one side of the duplex, one tenant pays the mortgage, the property tax, and the insurance, and the other side is pretty much pure cash flow unless I have repair-related issue, such as replacing washer and dryer or issues with the garbage disposal. But I'm not self-managing it. I have a property manager, and my property manager's name is Kevin, and I find him extremely reasonable. Because I learned from your podcast, you know, to scrutinize the property management agreement. What I have found is that Kevin is also a real estate investor. He's not just a property manager. He's not just a realtor. He's also an investor. So he has experience in all three areas. So he immediately agreed with me that the late fee should be split 50-50. So a lot of time when you look at a property, the agreement.
They want to keep the late fees. We've talked about that before, and I don't like that. Yeah. Folks, you know, one of the things I want to tell you is that don't be afraid to push back a little bit on property management issues. You know, you can negotiate, read that contract, don't give them too much latitude on discretionary repair items, because there's just a funny thing about life that when you give them a lot of latitude, they tend to take it. So, and we've talked about that many times in past episodes, you gotta be in control of your property management experience, okay? So very important, very important.
And the second thing I like about him is that he doesn't charge me the markup fee for repair. So those are the two things. And in exchange for that, I agree to make payments on all the repair directly to the vendor. So save him a little bit of paperwork. And that also gives me some level of control if I, you know, and I can contact the vendors directly. So
yeah, if it's an expensive repair, ask for more quotes and call them a quote, not an estimate, you know, in your emails and your discussions. Granted, it may not come out exactly that way, but calling it a quote will help you in case you need to argue with them later. But Ani, you know, I want to ask you, how many units do you have now total in your portfolio?
Well, because I was so happy with my duplex investment in Lehigh Acre, I later on purchased four more. So I have a total of five duplexes. I also
That's 10.
Yeah, 10. And then I also own two single-family homes in the area where Kevin managed, you know,
okay.
Where Kevin managed.
So 12 properties, and then you own your own condo and the one next door to you, right?
I sold the one next to me, but what I did is I bought another one from your network in Jackson, Mississippi, from a gentleman named mm-hmm. Brad. And I, you know, again, I heard your interview with Brad, so I decided that's an interesting opposite strategy because he is I consider him a more of a specialist for Section 8 housing and at times. So it was a $50,000 investment in a single family home in Jackson, Mississippi. And it produces $725 a month on rent. And I know that when I purchased that property, I knew the appreciation of, you know, in Jackson, Mississippi, would not be as high as in Lehigh Acre or Fort Myers. It's pretty much just a cash flow deal.
That's a much more linear cash flow oriented market. I agree. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Good stuff. Well, what are your plans next, Ani? You've got, I guess, what that sounds like it's about 15 units now total, right?
Well, yeah, I have one. I have two more single family homes in Arizona that I purchased prior to becoming a podcast listener. And those were purchased in 2011 and 2012.
Oh, you did good on those too. We were back in the Arizona market
then
for a little while. It got too expensive, so we stopped recommending it. But in Phoenix, you know, that's a sort of a hybrid market. So it gets a little expensive at times, and then we'll stop recommending it. And, you know, throughout the cycles, we'll go back in and recommend it for a time. And, you know, if you're there and you have properties, just keep them. I mean, you're stabilized. You know, you've got hopefully a good tenant and so forth.
Yeah, good tenants and different property manager. And then on top of that, you know, I had really cheap debt at the time because when I was in 2011 and 2012, the interest rate were 3.75 for a 30-year mortgage.
3.75.
Yeah. And then now the ones that I purchased in Lehigh and the rest of the Southwest Florida, that was 4.75. So the debt in Arizona at the time was considerably cheaper. So I have been talking to Sarah about at some point I would need to do a 1031 exchange because the rent in the area didn't keep up. Unlike Florida, the rent in this little Arizona town that I purchased real estate, pretty it gone up, but it didn't go up as high as the rent situation in Florida. But this Florida situation is kind of abnormal because that's Fort Myers has a number one rent increase in, I think, in 2014 and 2015 out of the whole entire nation. So, so while my Arizona rent also increased from the time when I purchased it, I think at the time when I purchased it in 2011, I was only getting maybe about $750, but now I'm getting $1,150 currently. So it has gone up, but then the property itself has even gone higher.
The rents will never keep up with a hybrid or definitely not a cyclical appreciation market. You're always behind on the rent, and rents, they lag because they're 1-year leases, because the comps aren't good for rental values. You know, it just it just doesn't, it's a much more fragmented market. You know, there's just not an exchange of data. When it comes to sales prices, there is a true exchange of data in the multiple listing service and at the county recorder's office, but that's not true on rents. And that can work for and against you as an investor. And, you know, we've talked about that on past episodes. Ani, we've got to wrap up though, but, you know, I just wanted to ask you kind of in conclusion, you know, any thoughts you have for investors, anything you want to share with them before we wrap it up?
I think it's important to make up your mind, buy real estate first and wait. Don't wait to buy real estate. I think it's important. And then also to, I would consider duplex investing, side-by-side duplex. Because even if you, they say if you lose a renter, you still have another renter paying the mortgages and property tax and insurance. That will make it a lot easier for you to hold the property. And another thing I realized with my single family.
Let me just comment on that for a moment, Ani, if I can. And I don't mean to like totally disagree with you there or anything. I think the plexes are okay, but I'll tell you something. You always get a better quality tenant in a single family home. And the single family homes generally, although listen to your story, which is a great story, they generally appreciate better than the plexes. And, you know, we've sold lots of duplexes, triplexes, and fourplexes, and then some big apartment complexes from time to time, too. You know, you can do that same diversification with two single family homes, right? So I just don't want people to like totally go overboard on that idea. I've heard that argument a lot. There's a lot of people out there that sell fourplexes and develop them and say, well, you know, if one's vacant, you only have 25% vacancy. If you have a single family home and it's vacant, you have 100% vacancy. Yes, you're right. I get that. But, you know, you can have four single family homes. Okay. So,
yes. Yeah,
you know,
and what I have found is that with my single family home, even though I may have $400 or $500 a month on cash flow, but when a tenant move out, pretty much all the cash flow will put into, like say, updating the paint, the carpet, a lot of update. So, and I think you should, and with the multiplex, I think you should be very selective. Personally, I don't like triplex or fourplex because I think too many renters can gang up on the property manager.
They do gang up on you. That's the other thing I meant to say. Even in duplexes, they'll do that. They do. When those people get together and talk, things can become difficult for you.
Yeah, it's true. And so you have to be very selective. I don't like the up and down kind of duplex. I only buy side by side because it gives a little more sense of independence. And and so I think you need both. I think you do need, you know, duplex and single family home. One should have a pretty good mixture. But, you know, you got to start somewhere, right?
We're all about diversification. So, totally hear you there. Yeah good stuff.
You know, start with a single family home and then just kind of, you know, use that as an example to learn, you know, as a good starting point. Because truthfully, I don't think I would have learned as much about real estate investing if I didn't buy it and then start making mistakes. But I would say pretty much all the silly mistakes I have made, my tenant basically paid for them. So,
right. Isn't that great? I love that comment, Ani. That's a great comment.
Yeah.
All the silly mistakes you made, your tenants basically paid for them for you. Isn't that beautiful? We outsource our mistakes and our debt to other people called tenants. Love it.
Yeah. And then you learn and then you make a better decision. You know, by the time when I moved to 2013 outside, you know, when I start purchasing real estate outside Alaska, I already made a lot of mistakes that I can and pay for. Mm-hmm. So when I look at something, I would be able to see why that's a better investment than the one I made before. But if you don't have any investment, real estate investment, you would not have the opportunity to learn to make mistakes, learn from it. And then you would not be able to tell which one is a better investment. I think you just have to get it started somewhere and with the help of your investment counselor. And then just keep moving forward.
Very good advice. Aniwi from Anchorage, Alaska, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your client case study with our listeners. And I'm sure everybody learned a lot from you. So thank you. Listeners out there, if you're a client of ours and you want to come on the show, reach out to us and let us know. We always love to hear these case study stories. So Ani, thank you very much for sharing.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guests' opinions are their own. And if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.